This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Andy Robbins speaks with sociologist Chris DeWeld. She comes to Western Michigan University this week to discuss gender inequality and sexual harassment for female professors and other women in higher education. But first, David Denby's career as a writer includes decades as a film critic, most recently at The New Yorker, where he remains a staff writer. Denby is also the author of 5 books. They tackle subjects such as getting young people interested in reading seriously and the impact of snark on public discourse. Denby will speak at Western Michigan University on Thursday. His address is called The Humanities in the Age of Demagoguery. It's part of the Promise of Education series sponsored by Western Michigan University's Center for the Humanities. David Denby, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Oh, thanks so much.
I'm going to begin with a quote that people can find pretty easily on Google, because I think you've written or said it a number of times, but it's in an article in The New Yorker this month called "Do Teens Read Seriously Anymore?" And you ask, could a country that widely read Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn have taken President Donald Trump seriously for a second? Why do you say that?
Well, I was thinking of the two con men, the king and the duke, who have imposed themselves on Huck and Jim, and who are completely larcenous, self-interested, lying, and so on. And so if everyone had read that and understood it and enjoyed it, it's not all that hard to understand, but it's certainly easy to enjoy, they would have realized that Donald Trump was a con artist and didn't mean anything that he said and lied about 2/3 of the time, according to most accounts. And they would have been, so to speak, inoculated. I know it doesn't always work this way. Literally, you read something and it changes your life, but at least you would have had the sense, the critical sense, of how to deal with some of these preposterous lies and nonsense that, unfortunately, now, you know, is in power. That's what I meant. I mean, you could, all kinds of good books will help to deepen oneself and one's understanding of other people and develop critical faculties. I mean, we're in a very strange and dangerous situation in this country, which is that the people in power are trying to change our grasp of reality, trying to reshape it with nonsense most of the time. And many people don't resist that. If this sort of fictional reality, the wild conspiracy theories, the accusations, and so on, are emotionally satisfying, they don't overturn them. What's depressing is that a lot of people are immune to reason and to logic and to example and to evidence. When they hear stuff that contradicts what they already believe, they just dig in deeper. Now, I mean, I don't mean that I'm not just talking about Donald Trump's voters, but they're the ones who are in power at the moment.
In that same article, you also address the question of whether we're putting too much emphasis on so-called STEM fields, which may be sort of blocking out more study of literature, et cetera. Is that part of the problem? And if so, are people miscalculating here what it means to study literature?
Yes, I think you put it very well. And it is a big part of the problem. And as you say, all the emphasis, not all the emphasis, but much of the emphasis the last 30 years or so has been on STEM subjects to produce a qualified workforce, technically qualified workforce. There's nothing wrong with studying engineering or technology or math, of course not, but for that to be the dominant kind of study in high school and then the dominant kind of majors in college could be a disaster for us. First of all, just in the practical sense, many employers, big deal employers, corporate employers, say they want people who can think and read a memo and write one and stand up and lead a meeting. A lot of corporate work is group work. They don't want robots. You know, they can buy robots and they can buy artificial intelligence, develop it. And a lot of the people who make themselves computer literate could be just put out of work by AI, the last generation of typists. And many other kinds of corporate workers were put out of work by business-to-business software and other kinds of computer development. So in a practical sense, it may not be right. But yes, if you have people who are not trained by reading literature, history, philosophy, engaging in the arts, to think in three dimensions rather than one or two, but to think they're not trained to think in three dimensions and to think critically, they could be suckers for what we were describing earlier, this kind of emotion-laden, conspiratorial thinking that satisfies your feelings and steals your heart and mind and individuality at the same time.
I also wonder sometimes if the rising cost of higher education, the stories that you read about students who end up with mountains of debt when they're done, maybe lead some students to think that they want the sure thing, the thing that they know will lead to a good paycheck or is more likely to lead to a good paycheck when they graduate so that they can turn around and pay off the student debt.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, that is the thinking. And I'm sure parents play their role in saying, oh, you know, why are you reading history? What are you going to do with that? If you're not going to be a lawyer, what is the point of that? Or some sentences like that. Why don't you take economics courses and math and so on? But they may be wrong about what's most attractive in higher level jobs. And what I think might be attractive is, as well as abilities with numbers, is also ability with ideas and ability with people and ability with perception of people and understanding of what other people want, and particularly people who are different from you. We live in a multi-ethnic society. That's our fate. I mean, the Trump people are trying to limit immigration to preserve white domination, but we do live in a multi-ethnic society in which you've got to learn to get along with other people.
So let me go back to the title of your address at Western Michigan University coming up, The Humanities in the Age of Demagoguery. Can the humanities have a fair fight with demagoguery?
I feel like we're losing at the moment. Well, let's put it this way. The founding fathers, a brilliant class of political intellectuals, were soaked in the humanities. They studied classical Greek and Roman texts, political philosophy in particular, Christian texts, of course, Locke and Hobbes, the 17th century English political theorist, and the 18th century Scottish philosophers like David Hume and Adam Smith. They were Enlightenment intellectuals. They were steeped in the humanities, and they were Christian deists, meaning that they believed that God created everything, and then left us alone. That's why you needed a constitution. You weren't being given any rules or any laws. You had to, for what a good society was, you had to create them. So what I'm saying is that their understanding, which worked out rather well, was produced by reading philosophy and history. There wasn't much technology to study. So that would seem to me something that more people should emulate. It would certainly help, to produce a new leadership class if there were more people like the founding fathers.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. I'm speaking with New Yorker staff writer David Denby. He will speak on Thursday night at Western Michigan University. Denby spent more than 40 years as a film critic for The New Yorker and other publications, but his first book was about books. He went back to Columbia University, re-enrolled, and read some of the classics. Denby's book about that experience, Great Books, was published in 1996. His 2016 book, Lit Up, chronicles his time in three high schools to see if books could still shape young lives.
I need to renew myself by reading every once in a while. I think it's a relief just to turn off the TV and turn off the radio and not look at your computer screen. And there's also a lot of studies suggesting that what we read on computer screens, and this is important for students, high school kids in particular, I mean, that what we read on computers, we don't retain. You skim, you jump to the point, the major point, and there's something physiologically about the process that doesn't, imprint itself, so to speak, on your brain in the same way that holding a book in your hand and reading the pages do. I mean, when people recall things that happen in, say, a turning point in a novel, they can even remember where on the page it was. So that's the kind of imprinting on the brain that sliding digits can't possibly duplicate.
And you do say that actually kids, younger people today, are probably reading more words than their parents did at the same age. But the problem becomes retaining understanding it.
Right, yes, because they're reading on screens all the time, and they're reading excerpts of things. And in schools, they're reading pieces of fiction and pieces of great essays and so on, and they're getting a lot of information. The question, just as you say, is how much are they retaining of it? My guess is not very much. It can be hard for a lot of people to settle down with a book. I mean, they have to sort of change their sense of time, change their internal clock. And there's an initial resistance to it if you've been spending a lot of time on screens. Believe me, I know. Once you get over that resistance and you fall into your obsessions, whatever they are, you're deeply gratified in a way that's not possible reading on screen.
You often come to the defense of teachers. You call them the most maligned and ignored professionals in American life. But if we're going to get young people reading seriously, and if we're going to make the humanities more a part of education, do we need to make some systemic changes in education?
Well, I'm not saying that all teachers are good. Of course, there are bad teachers who should be weeded out. And I'm in favor, for whatever it's worth, of giving principals more power to do that. Not summary dismissal, of course, because that could be used politically or personally to just remove anyone who you disagreed with or who offended you or criticized you. But what we should be doing is raising the status of teachers. They should be given pride of place. Parents know how important they are to their children, but as a class of persons, they are reviled regularly and disregarded, and they're assumed to be losers. And that's a disastrous formation of attitudes if we want to improve education. So I would certainly raise the pay and raise the status of teachers, and I doesn't look like it's going that way, does it?
Would you say that you are optimistic going forward? Are you pessimistic? You're somewhere in the middle when it comes to seeing more reading, more study of the humanities, etc.?
Well, I really don't know. I'm generally pessimistic, I guess, but I don't really know which way we're going to go. I mean, the common sense value of what we were saying earlier about how you may be more employable if you're a three-dimensional person who can read and, you know, and can read fiction and philosophy and so on and understand other people. If that view becomes more widespread, then maybe there would be some sort of change in educational policy. Certainly this emphasis on test scores, which is perfectly congruent with this whole STEM mentality, has been a catastrophe. Everyone knows that, I think virtually everyone. I mean, it empties out the classroom time. You wind up doing test prep instead of studying a rich curriculum of arts, sciences, and everything else. I mean, even playtime and in between classes has been eliminated for this endless test prep. I mean, that has got to end, and it makes teachers feel useless and cynical and tempts them to game the system in order to produce students with higher scores and all of those abuses. I mean, it was well-meaning initially. George W. Bush and Ted Kennedy collaborated on this sort of thing. The idea was to somehow raise working-class kids by centering education more on basic skills. And I think that the idealism, though, was overtaken by the practicality and the impossibility and the general sort of Philistine anti-learning attitudes that were built into the system. So, I hope it disappears.
David Denby is a staff writer for The New Yorker. He will speak at Western Michigan University on Thursday. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thanks so much.
David Denby's address, called The Humanities in the Age of Demagoguery, is sponsored by Western Michigan University's Center for the Humanities as part of their series called The Promise of Education. Details about Thursday's address can be found through a link at wmuk.org.